You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Emily Clark. Emily, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, I know you're in New Hampshire now, right?
Yes.
And you're normally based where?
I'm based in New York City, but I spend a lot of the summer and part of the year in New Hampshire.
That sounds nice. So let's talk about what you're working on right now. What is it that the listeners, you know, may not know much about your work? So what is it? Do you have your studio in New Hampshire? Is that where you also can work?
Yes, I can also work here. And I've been working for many years out of 19th century natural historians and scientists using their work as a point of departure for my work. And so far, they've mostly been women. And what I'm working on now is sort of taking from my last project where I was exploring the literal interpretation of the word ecology, which is Earth's household, and trying to think about what that really means. And initially that happened through working with the 19th century scientist Ellen Richards. And now I'm bringing together a lot of different historical texts and researching those, but then also just working out in the landscape. So when I'm in New York, I'm working with my immediate surrounding in the city, and here in New Hampshire, I'm working with the area around me. And I'm on a lake here, so I'm thinking a lot about both the ecology of the water, but also of the land. So just to give some, like, I don't know, concrete
ideas. Let's talk about that, because I love that idea of the Earth's house and where you are now, that, like, New York City and, you know, New Hampshire are obviously such different places to contemplate that or to research that. So let's talk about how that manifests itself. And you know, you could either talk about what's happening in New Hampshire or New York, or what you're thinking now about
Sure.
how that'll come to life.
Yeah, I mean, remarkably, there are a lot of similar plant species in both places, especially the things that just grow up, you know, like through the sidewalks and what we call weeds in both places aren't that different from each other. But of course, the difference in New Hampshire is that there's much greater diversity and more open space. So in New Hampshire, since I'm here now, I'll talk about that for starters. And a lot of the work that I do is from a floating research station that I have in the lake. And I have it anchored in a part of the lake that's a marsh. And there's tremendous wildlife there. And my work is very much subjected to a set of structures, and I find that that's actually very freeing in the way that allows me to be much freer in the way that I want to work. But I always set up a lot of rules and structures for how I go about my daily practice. And so one of them that I've been doing here is I go out to my floating research station, and I've been walking in concentric circles through the water around the research station and studying all the different flora and fauna that exists in the water. So I walk in like increments of 4 feet around the station until I reach the boundaries of it, the edge of the lake. And I collect all, and this is true for my work for many years, I collect everything and I attempt to identify it and I preserve it. And contrary to maybe like what one might then conclude, that that's where my, because I also am a painter and I make watercolors, and I call those drawings, not paintings, just because I think of drawing as kind of a thinking, more of a direct thinking of the way I think, than painting feels like more of a physical process. But that's a whole other story. But what's generative about the watercolors is actually the process of moving through the environment, as opposed to necessarily like an illustration kind of relationship to what I'm observing. Does that make sense?
It does, but explain that more. So in the process of, as you were saying, moving around the research station, and I wanted to ask you about that research station. Is that something you built, or that's kind of a parks department sort of thing?
No, that's something I built. I've for the last, I guess, about 6 years, I've been building these different research stations that take on different forms, both as sort of functional sculptures, interactive sculptures, and they've.
So tell me how you build them, and then let's talk about the drawings. But how do you build that research station? And the one that you were just talking about in New Hampshire is in the middle of a lake. Is that correct?
Yeah, so it's on floats, so it looks sort of like a little tiny cabin. I work with a woodworker who helps me make sure that the structures and that they're going to last for a long time and deal with, like, the inclement weather that we have here and that sort of thing. The station is built all out of wood, and it has birch bark on the outside and pine twigs, sort of, you know, small logs, and it has things growing on it. So it has the effect of kind of blending into the environment and allowing the wildlife to sort of think that it's not there, that it's not a human thing. but it's a 8 by 8 foot structure, and it has a table that folds down and a bench, and I sleep out there sometimes so that I can experience the whole process of the day and night. And sometimes I draw out there, but I do a lot of writing, sound recordings, studying, that sort of thing. And I collect a lot of specimens and preserve them, like, through a herbarium process where you preserve a botanical specimen, or I keep things in jars if they're living, or that sort of thing.
Okay, so that sounds wonderful. And now, you know, that's more of an image of you kind of circling around that station. So are you in a boat when you're approaching it? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I take a kayak out there, and then I dock the kayak on the station, and I begin my process at the beginning of the day by circling around the station on foot. I wear hip waders because there are leeches in that area of the marsh, and I can relax more if I have my lower body covered. So I walk around in the concentric circles, and then when I'm done with that, I go on to the actual station, and I usually then write for quite a while and collect all of the things that I've been observing. And sometimes I have to go back out to the water again and check things and make sure I got it right. So there's a lot of back and forth into the water and back onto the station.
So the writings that you're doing and the observations are really almost like a naturalist, a botanist, or an anthropologist?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm interested in, I have this lifelong process of trying, a taxonomic study of trying to understand and learn about the flora and fauna and my environment. And, you know, it's an infinite process, because as soon as you learn one set of things, you realize that there's so many more things to learn. And I'm not a scientist. I'm completely self-taught. So I'm not trying to pretend to be one. I'm interested in it more from, well, there are two things that interest me about it. One is about, I'm interested in knowledge and what happens when you, kind of put yourself in a situation to be able to put names to things and understand how they work, because then the next step is that you understand how they work with other things. And it just makes the world much more visible and vital and animated to me. But then the other part of it is that it creates a kind of parallel, a kind of imaginative space for me in terms of thinking visually and thinking about creating space and actually making a space for the viewer that is more of an enactment of my experience in taking all of this in than saying, like, oh, I've just learned that there's pickerel weed in the marsh, and now I'm going to paint a picture of that. So it's not about a, like, one-to-one thing. It's more of a more experiential, more hopefully transformational in the sense of like allowing one space to move into another.
And so let's talk about that through the lens of the drawings, or paintings. Are you at the moment, are you also painting, drawing, or making things now, or are you essentially writing now? What phase of work are you in?
Both things. When I'm on the station, I tend to make smaller drawings with the watercolor. I might zoom in on one thing that I want to capture immediately in the state that I've found it, so that I can remember it. It's like a memory device for me. But then when I go back into this, what often, it sounds like magic or something, but what often happens is that at the end of the experience or some point in the middle of the experience, I suddenly sort of imagine a drawing in my head. And then I go back into the studio and, you know, I do work from close observation. I work with a microscope as well. And I have all of these plants and dead fish and leeches and other things, and I bring them back into the studio, and then I start to make a larger, more sort of complicated drawing, using those as a point of departure. But usually at that moment I have sort of an idea in my head about the composition and the kind of the way that I want the viewer to enter. So just to give you a concrete example, so when it's part of this project in the last couple of years has also led me to hunting for food, and I wanted to do that because I wanted to see how that would change my relationship to the environment, to think about the animal. I'm not a vegetarian, so I wanted to see what that meant to actually relate to the food in my environment. And so in that case, I would go out on the station an hour before sunrise and stay there and until usually for about 3 hours total, and then do the same thing in the evening an hour before sunset. And the first time I did this, which was 2 years ago, about the third day in, I had this overwhelming experience that the world had separated out into all these parts, and I could understand like all, you know, sort of all the sensory experiences like sound and temperature and moisture and what was coming through the air, what was making different noises. Were they birds? What kind of birds? Were they leaves? Were they all of those things had this kind of like acute presence to them. And in the process of thinking about that, I suddenly felt like my own body, my own person was absent, like it was a void. And so it was that moment, and this is to be very literal about how things unfold for me, sure. But at that moment I imagined a very large drawing that had a void in the center. And so then I proceeded to go into the studio and work on a drawing that was just that had the constraint of having this void in the center. And that was a composition that ended up like sticking with me for a while. So I hope that clarifies a little bit.
You know, that does. That does, and it's so interesting. I mean, when I think about your practice, and that is a concrete example and a very interesting one too. We can almost imagine the void, although there'll be images with this interview as well, so people can see your work. But it also seems to me that you're very interested in learning, period, right? Your process, you know, that you've been discussing so far is, you know, about observation as well as this kind of imaginative or almost poetic experience that you have where something comes to you and then you work on it, as opposed to, you know, working like Audubon or something. It sounds like there's also an incredible thirst for knowledge and interest, almost like, like shades of Thoreau a little bit, but something that's just about a love of learning itself. Is that accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Thoreau because I've been obsessed lately with his journals. And part of what I love about his writing is that he is both deeply committed to a kind of close study, a kind of close observation. But in his writing, he allows for daily life to come in. And I think as I, you know, get older and come to understand my relationship more clearly to my practice, it has a lot to do with daily life and the relationship to the quotidian experience and the domestic experience. And I don't mean domestic in like a gendered kind of, you know, housewife kind of way. I mean domestic in that, you know, we all have to go through this daily experience of eating and sleeping and breathing and working and interacting and all of this kind of thing. And so I feel like the acquisition of knowledge is about kind of creating, I mean, for me, there is, it's about a thirst, but it also, it's not just open ended. It's very connected to a process and a particular program in the sense of like I don't just like pick one thing and let it lead me to the next thing. I am open, but I'm also very structured in the sense that, like, at least right now, I've been really trying to deal with this question of Earth's household and thinking about, well, what does it really look like? What does water's household really look like? What does air's household really look like? But then move that from this big question, this big, huge question, to something very specific. Like, if you understand, if you can gain some sort of knowledge about, like, the 8 square feet that surrounds your body, then that can be, it's like, there's a word for that, but it's like a, you know, like the way a stone, when you throw a stone into the water, you know, that it creates these concentric rings. And so, like, knowledge in a very specific way can lead to an understanding of a more complicated sphere. And,
yeah, that makes sense. So that's clear. That's clear. I mean, what also strikes me is that you're, you know, in this kind of structure that you've set up, as you were saying, that's quite specific in where that those activities, that behavior leads to knowledge and to work, or to, you know, at least inquiring. It's also a lifestyle that you've designed. I mean, as opposed to, there are artists with, you know, research practices that are working on all kinds of things or doing a lot of research, but a lot of times the research that's happening is often academic research. And in terms of your research, while you could say it's academic, I suppose, there's also like a lifestyle you've designed, a way of being, right? Because so much of this sounds like it's outside of the studio. And even the way you talk about Thoreau and the domestic issues that he brings up on a daily basis, you're designing a way of also living, aren't you?
I guess. I mean, I sort of don't love the word lifestyle because I feel like it's tied up in all sorts of issues around class and leisure and,
right.
You know, I, and
but I mean,
I
as
guess
opposed
I,
to going into the studio every day and working or reading and working, it seems like a good amount of your time is spent outside the studio, which obviously, you know, helps create what's in the studio, but it also is, this experiential thing that you're involved with all the time,
yeah,
as
absolutely.
Opposed to the paper or the canvas or whatever it is that the medium is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm kind of a weirdo because I do, you know, I'm a conceptual artist who also uses traditional media. And my experience is I haven't met that many people who sort of go between those two things. And to me, they're all equally important. Like, the research isn't to support the paintings. It is as much part of my practice as making the watercolors are, or as making the research stations is. So, yeah, maybe I don't mean that in a prideful way, but I think I'm sort of an unusual practitioner in that way. Mm. And I mean, where the question of the lifestyle comes up, I think it has more to do with, like, I mean, years ago, I had this realization that why should we as artists say, okay, this is what I do for my work, and then this is what I do, what I'm interested in, or my hobby, or whatever. And I, you know, and there are certainly people who've been doing this for years and years, long before me, but that, you know, there was this, the sense that if you could bring all the things that are stimulating and engaging to you intellectually, emotionally, on every level into your work, the work would be that much the richer for it. And I discovered that as like a sense of liberation. So that it was that moment that my studio sort of became more like a laboratory and less like a place with easels in it, you know? And I still value the you know, at the root of my practice is probably, I think my thinking happens best through my drawing and painting practice, in terms of like that goes way back. That's intuitive. It's deep for me. But all the other, I guess I'm just open to allowing anything else that needs to have happen, whether it's being out of the studio or being in the body of water or working with my microscope or dissecting a bird or something like that. I don't feel like one thing, I think it's all possible. It just depends on how it gets used. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't think it's not like a touchy feely, like, oh, you can do anything you want, but it's more that if it's purposeful, if it provides like a connective tissue that's rich and informative, and then why not? Why not bring the studio inside and outside?
Absolutely. And so when will the next work be shown? Is there an upcoming show, or what will happen with the work that you're making now?
I'm not sure exactly. I imagine that I will have a show of it at some point in the next year or so. I just had a show recently with my gallery in New York, so I don't have anything on the books right now. But hopefully, I've, you know, been meeting with some people, and we'll see. I'm not sure. I don't have anything concrete to report for that moment.
And your gallery in New York at the moment is what?
Morgan Lehman Gallery, yeah.
And so that is most likely where you'll have a show in the future. They're still representing you.
Yes.
Well, very good. I look forward to that. And before we go, I wanted to ask you what you're reading now, the question I ask everybody at the end.
Well, you're a good interviewer because you anticipated it. I'm reading Wild Fruits by Thoreau, which was a manuscript he hadn't published during his lifetime, but it deals with foraging and edible botany. So... You were clued into the thorough interest.
Right.
I'm reading a bunch of stuff, but that's the one that I'm sort of most engaged in at the moment.
Emily, I want to thank you for talking with me today. I really enjoyed hearing about your work and process.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. It was great talking to you, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.